These halls are twice the size of the central office room. They're huge.
Okay.
You saw.
Good evening. It's 6:15 p.m. Today is Monday, January the 13th, 2014. This is the Policy Instruction Personnel Student Services Committee meeting. Carla, would you please call roll?
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Here.
Mr. Medina?
Here.
And Mrs. Searles and Ms. Quintana here as board members, along with many of our devoted administrators. And Dr. Velez.
Happy board month.
Thank you.
Oh, that's right.
Happy board. Thank you.
How are you?
Happy board month.
Thank you. And the first agenda item, please.
Item A, University of Texas at El Paso, MOU. Ms. Jimenez.
Ms. Jimenez.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Board members and Dr. Delavis, and happy board recognition.
Thank you.
I'm here to speak to you about the memo of understanding from UTEP. The memo of understanding deals with our student teacher program, our professional development at our partner schools. Our professional development schools are those schools where the professors from UTEP have their classes at the campuses. There's currently two campuses that have agreed to host professional development, that is CCE, Community Elementary, and Alerete. The other partner schools, there are currently six partner schools that we have. It's CE, Childress, Alerete, Damian, Canutil Middle, and Canutil High School. This semester we only have 12 student teachers. But UTEP is asking us to sign this memo of understanding. I've been here a total of 5 years, and from what I understand, it's been done before, and this is just to update their records. I'll be happy to entertain any questions.
Any questions?
I just have one. You said we were going to get 5 student teachers?
No, this semester we have 12 student teachers. The College of Education has been reorganized due to the being in a warrant status, the College of Education, and they have reorganized their college. But the other issue is that there's an excess of teachers right now that don't have jobs. And so the number of applicants that are going to UTEP to become teachers has dropped considerably. Yeah, there's quite a drop. Every semester, they've decreased. Last semester, we had 22 student teachers. When I first started here 5 years ago, we had 60 student teachers, but it's dropped steadily since then. So there's not a lot of students going to the university to get their degree in teaching right now. Consequently, we do have a lot of substitutes that are certified. And a lot of the student teachers that we get in the student teacher program end up becoming permanent teachers here in our school district. Many of them are hired. They're also hired for subs. They're also hired for academic tutors. So a lot of them are very, very good.
Thank you. I have a question.
Yes.
There's no fee for this contract?
No, there's no fee at all. We meet, when I say we, it's called the El Paso Regional Induction Consortium. It's all of the school districts here in the city of El Paso, along with Community College, UTEP, and Region 19. And we coordinate all of our student teaching services. We've done a lot of different things for the university, such as rewriting the student teaching handbook and many other different things that we've done. If there's any issues that are going on with the student teachers while they're here on our campuses, we address those issues during those meetings. And those are held once a month with the College of Education.
Okay. I don't have a problem with that, Ms. Penn.
An agreement.
Okay, we'll recommend it to the full board.
Okay,
thank you. Next agenda item, Carlos.
Item B, Boy and Girls Club Grant Review. Ms. Zuniga.
Good evening, members of the committee, Dr. Galaviz.
I have some information related to a grant. This is a grant through the Office of Justice Division with the Governor's Office. Initially, the Boys and Girls Club had proposed to write this grant. However, late last week, I received a call that they would not be able to write it for us because of a conflict because procurement guidelines, a conflict with procurement guidelines, with them possibly being the ones that we form a partnership, they couldn't be the ones to write the grant. However, I can coordinate this grant and get this information and get it through in coordination with the Student Support Division, if this is something that you want to focus on. Initially, they were proposing $50,000 for an after-school program, and the funding from this comes through the federal government, through the governor's office, but it's for substance abuse and drug prevention programs for at-risk youth, which basically related to any delinquency prevention, substance abuse, and any other programs related to that, which would really and promote healthy lifestyles and just youth and character development for these youths.
I have a question. Yes, Ms. Patsy, do you have any questions, Ms. Searles?
Said it would be at Garantio Elementary?
Initially, that's where they proposed to house the program. Okay. However, they would not necessarily be now with the Boys and Girls Club. We would probably go out for procurement to see who the better partner is. But I see that they're probably the one that would be closely related to this type of program. And yes, Ms. Melendez had agreed to be the project director overseeing the after-school program.
And it would be open to children of what ages?
Depending on what our guidelines would be related to any drug prevention, we were getting stats related to any truancy problems, any other behavioral issues related to in front of the USD that we would need to focus on. I believe I have some of those here, but
they're currently there. They were there last year.
Oh.
And so they.
I think our biggest concern has been, or our biggest incident reported has been violation of student code of conduct. That's a big issue. That's about 85% of our incidents reported last year. This is as of last year.
Is there a question, Madam Chair? As I read this, it sounds like only, it's not at-risk children. It's children who are already in trouble.
At-risk considered related to be able to keep them out of the juvenile justice system.
But
not at-risk in the sense of educational at-risk, the 13 criteria that
but they're already in some kind of trouble, so
right.
We're trying to get them back
prevent
on
them, right,
on course. Okay. The only thing that I saw, and you know, it's I'm sure very hard to do, and I don't know how you all do it because it seems to be the Canutio way. You can't use any of this money for food or refreshments.
Generally, federal programs
do
there's a prohibition. Yeah. Other than their Title I funds, which is for parental involvement or snacks.
So that can supplement. Okay.
Any parental involvement, and they do have funding for that. Campuses have.
Okay.
All campuses have funding for that.
So that can intermingle with
usually,
this?
Yes. Programs, federal programs have to be in coordination with each other.
Okay.
So depending on how we use parental involvement related to this program, possibly.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Medina?
No questions.
I have a question. Who's overseeing this program at CES right now?
I believe Ms. Melendez is.
Yes. And this is after school, so she stays after school with the kids, or?
I'm not sure who currently stays after school. I'm not sure that it is the same program. I know that the Boys and Girls Club came directly and presented this for this type of program. But for this particular one, they're not able to be involved at the very beginning because then they would be prohibited from being our partner because of procurement guidelines.
Is that going to be an issue with procurement guidelines that is going to affect the district?
No, no. As far as them being, I guess it would be our vendor, so to speak, if we choose them as a vendor. So they couldn't write the grant. because they want to be able to participate with partners, so they couldn't write the grant.
Okay. Are we in agreement to recommend? Okay.
Yes.
We'll recommend it to the full board. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Yu. Next agenda item, Carlos.
Item C, Title III AMAO's information. Dr. Garcia.
Good evening, board members, and Dr. Calabiz. Happy New Year to those who I have not seen since last year, and also happy Board's Recognition Month.
Thank you.
I'm here to discuss with you, to present to you the communication we received from DEA, first action required letter dated December 17, in reference to the annual measurable achievement objective amounts report. We received the report, and amounts number 3 that is in the communication that you received, amounts number 3 refers to accountability system safeguards, which deal, we did not meet. That's the only amount that we did not meet. And it deals also with the reading, writing, and social studies areas that we did not meet the requirements. Based on the letter, the communication that DEA sent us, the first step for us is to communicate this results to the parents through a formal letter. I have already drafted the letter, and it was attached to the communication presented to you. I drafted the letter in English and Spanish, and it is intended to go out to the campuses this week upon your approval. And also, it's important to note that in the letter the DEA sent us, there was a notation here that when the amount had been missed 2 years in a row, we are also required, we will receive a second communication from DEA, which we did. It was sent to Dr. Galavis on December 18th. And according to this second communication, we're supposed to also develop a continuous improvement plan, CIP. We will be working with the Region 19 and, of course, with our campuses to create this second step, and we will provide further information for this step. As it is right now, the letters to the parents need to go out before February the 4th, so we are ready for the accomplishment of the first step.
Any questions? No. I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
What does the continuous improvement plan include?
It actually tells us if we were supposed to include strategies and activities that will address the areas that we did not meet. In this case, activities and strategies to improve the ELL's academic achievement in reading, writing, and social studies in particular.
These results are from when?
The results are from last year, 2012-13, and based on the second communication, it seems like the same amount was missed in the year 2011-12. With your approval, the letters can be disseminated to the campuses this week in English and Spanish, and the principals will disseminate the letters directly to the students to take home to their parents.
Okay.
we're supposed to keep files and communication in the ALS office in case the FDA decides to audit the compliance of this action.
One more question? Okay. Thank you. This is just information on
just information for you to know where we are. And if you approve, then I can release the letter to the administrators, to the principals, to be sent to the parents.
Yeah, we have to do it.
We have to do the letter by 1 February.
So we have to approve it?
No, you don't have to
do
the
letter. No, that's what I'm saying. We don't have to.
You don't have to, right?
Right.
I just present it to you, and if you agree, I can release it.
The whole region missed.
Right, and that's what I said. We don't have to approve it.
You don't have to approve it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. Thank you for your information.
You're welcome.
Ricardo, next agenda item, please.
Item D, school district's visit report. Dr. Garcia.
This is only a brief summary of the results of the visit that Ms. Babenko and I conducted back in October 24th, 25th to Cyfair ISD in Galena Park ISD. I took the time to provide as much information in a very short format, and if you have any questions in that regard, I would be here to answer.
I'm just going to make a comment. The comment I made to you earlier is that although when Ms. Quintana and I made that, not me, but attended that class, was very interesting. And I know that right now we don't have the funds.
Well, the I believe the one that you referred to was the Cyfair. Fairbanks ISD.
Correct.
And that was pretty much for the newcomers.
Is that the flyer, the brochure that I had emailed you?
Yes. So we actually visited two. We visited Galena Park and Cyfair Banks. Both programs are different in both districts. The implementation of the programs deferred mostly in the setting, in that case for the newcomers. It's more a difference in setting than in funding. Now, when we speak about the dual language programs implementation, that is actually both districts has a lot of funding invested in the program, and they were kind enough to provide us the personnel of the department, so we will have an idea what it takes, how much personnel is involved in this. And yes, both districts, though the programs are implemented differently, but they have invested a lot of money in the personnel and also in the trainings. But as far as the newcomers, it's actually more setting than finance.
Any questions?
Yes. I just will never forget getting on the bus with you and Ms. Quintana after you'd been to this program. And I mean, it was like you just discovered sliced bread. It was wonderful. Did you feel this way after you went to Cyfair?
When we went to Cyfair, the way the classrooms that we observed for the newcomer, I don't know exactly what you saw, but I was not too impressed. It was not exactly what I think that we want for our middle and high school students, especially.
Wow.
The students were isolated for the whole semester, and the instruction that they were receiving were pretty much at pre-K and K ESL English level. That was not the program that they actually had presented to you, I believe. I don't know what you saw, but what we saw is not anything. Now, the program that we saw at Galena Park was very impressive for the newcomers. the newcomers were actually part of the other student population, and it was just the arrangement of the content area being taught at the grade level with additional instructional support with ESL and lab and very good coordination from the content area teachers and the counselors. The teachers, counselors, and the high school were extremely involved in the planning and the implementation of the program. But that was with Galena Park ISD.
Well, where do you think, I mean, we just saw this a year ago, less than a year ago. Where do you, they couldn't have changed their whole program.
And that was a very interesting observation, and we found interesting. We asked the director of the program who was handling a visit, and we asked for the video or something, and I think I made a notation.
Yeah, I saw that they...
Where they said that unfortunately they were not able, they would not release any videos or any recent information to us.
Did you inquire of them how the pamphlet that was brought back by your board members did not seem to match the program?
We did ask, and the response was very kind of cut and dry. We got to go. We just gave you the opportunity to visit our two campuses, but we are done with this. So we were kind of disappointed at some point with the response that we received. It was not exactly what we expected. Now, the other district, they have a whole day planned for us. They have a lot of materials prepared for us in classroom observations, and we met with the administration
I read all that, but it perplexes me why they would showcase their program to the National School Boards Association, and then go in reality to not reflect that, you know, type of pride and coming forth with it. But my understanding was they had an immersion program.
And if they did, but the version of the immersion program is what I outlined in the report to you. And that's the version that they presented to us. And we saw it in the classroom. We saw the students playing bingo cards, body parts, and it was kind of what you teach to kindergarten students. Mm-hmm. And these were middle school and high school students that they bossed together in one campus as newcomers. Mm-hmm. And they keep them isolated from the rest of the students for that semester.
So what is their success rate then doing that? Did they give you that?
No.
Or can you actually, I would think that you would be able to get that off the TEA website to see
and
if they're
yes,
in the boat we're in.
And I think before we went into the trip, I mm-hmm. pulled out the report,
uh-huh.
and the report was not pretty good in TEA either.
So better than ours?
No way.
No? Okay.
No, but the other one from
Galena
Park, both districts, mm-hmm. the Galena Park was, and I will personally say this, Galena Park is a district, was neighbor with the district where I was working before, mm-hmm. in the bilingual also department, and Galena Park turned, I would say, 360 degrees from the Galena Park that I knew before. It's a very, very well implemented program now. And I was very impressed with the newcomers program.
So, did any of this make you come to a decision what you were going to bring forward to the board for us to look at to improve our program?
From the Galena part, I will probably say that we could look closely to their practices. And I believe, like I said, for the newcomers, it's more the matter of structure in the high school and the middle schools with newcomers, more than personnel, and I don't see extra costs of that. It's more of the way of involving all parties, like the counselors and the teachers and mm-hmm. the continuity and everybody. So I would say for the board, it would be very, very worth it to look into the practice of Galena Park ISD.
And their practice is dual language, then?
Well, both districts have to let language to go. Site fair, after I questioned and asked, they finally admitted that they only advertised as dual language, but in reality, it was an early exit program.
I know that we have dual language. We put so much money into it, I want to say 15 years ago. We were the cutting edge. We were everything. We put all our money into it, and guess what? It didn't work.
Now, the
Galena
Park has a working program, dual language, for 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they lead the program. The whole campus of where the dual language program is based on the SIOP model of framework of instruction. But it's not a program across the district. It's just in certain schools that they have it.
Yeah, my experience was, and this comes from sitting on the board here in Canyon, it was dual language, was extremely high dollar, resulted in very few encouraging results, very few happy parents, and very few well-educated children. They spoke neither English or Spanish. They spoke some mix and combination, and it did not succeed. And that's why it sort of went by the wayside within the last, I would say, probably 5 years.
Yeah, we had it.
Yeah.
Not so long ago.
We had it. I mean, we were the cutting edge of dual language. We had it all together. We put every bit of financing, support. It didn't happen. It didn't work for our kids. They were no better off than they had been before, maybe possibly even worse off.
From the visit report, I could say that the Galena Park has shown a big increase through the dual language program of the ELL's academic performance. And I'm speaking from the data that I observed from Galena Park. Now, I don't know much about the history of our program here, but it's my understanding that it was working very effectively. And now that we have the biliteracy graduate dual language committee, we are reviewing a lot of literature that back up what we saw in Galena Park going on, and a lot of research that shows that the program, if it's done well, implemented and monitored correctly, it will
give
the results that we expect.
Ours was, and I don't think there's a board member around. Here comes another board member. That would say that it was a success, and that's, you know.
What I saw since I got on the board and then looking at the results we were seeing, we were actually seeing some of those students perform at higher levels than the native English speakers. So there was some results that we were seeing within the program. And then with our previous administration, when the budget happened, they made drastic cuts to that program, but we were actually seeing the results and even better results with the non-English speakers, ELLs, where some of them were even performing at higher levels than the native speakers. And so there was, from my understanding, the program was working. And then they cut big time.
Was it a full track from elementary through middle to high school at the time, or did it stop?
It was more
elementary only.
Yeah. Stops at fifth grade.
That was a history here?
Yes.
Okay.
History across the state.
Now, I would like to add that other remarks that we have just heard are really, really well documented with a lot of research. That normally, if the dual language program is done correctly, is monitored correctly, we have the resources and the personnel to work with it, a well-structured department to lead the program and support the professional development and everything. Nationally, we have several studies that show that the non-ELLs, most of the time, outperform the ELLs when the program is done, well done. And that's why this district had engaged with it for 11 years, and they are even adding more to it, more personnel, more resources.
If I might, yeah.
Thank you.
Just if I might, the other thing that when we were looking at the 1 through 5, we were actually, I was trying to go back, because Because I know there was when the stakeholders committee, they made drastic cuts, but we were actually seeing a lot of results. And the other thing was, you know, when the program was actually put in place correctly, those students' ability not only to attain the second language or comprehension, there's studies shown where their ability to process things, whether it's numbers or even languages, is a lot better because they're using both brains. So there's been a lot of research. Something that we need to look at.
I have just one question. Dr. Garcia, I understand that you saw a lot of things that going up that you want to implement here. Have you started looking at a dollar figure of how much it's going to cost additionally?
That is a very interesting question. In fact, in the monthly meetings that we had engaged in the literature review for dual language, this month of January, our article is strictly on the cost of implementation of a dual language program. So yes, I have looked at it, and there is not much research that have done strictly to that angle, for the exception of this particular study that was conducted by universities. I will be going in depth this month in the next meeting that we're having. That's the topic of discussion.
How big is Galena Park?
Galena Park is about, they have, for what I understood at this point, they have 58 campuses.
58 campuses?
Yes. Wow. They have a lot of mobility, and that's a reason why they do not implement, one reason they said they do not implement the dual language in every campus across the district. So there are ways to look at it, but the cost is something that we're going to be discussing in that particular article, and I have been formally invited by BEAMS also to present that in the conference. So that will give us some information.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Carlos, next agenda item, please.
Item B, master schedule process, Mr. Basuto.
Oh, good evening. I'll have to talk to this time. It didn't work. I'm just giving information on the master schedule process that we're in the midst of moving from here to the end of the school year. Okay? Right now, currently, we're working on advertising curriculum and we're pending for registration. And so right now we're advertising what course offerings are to be offered at the middle and the high school. Discussion around that with counselors and campus principals. In addition, we're coordinating, or the coordination was done right before the Christmas break to go vertically from elementary to middle to high. That's pretty much what the counselors are coming in at the elementary and advertising. Yes, ma'am?
I have a question. Do you have a catalog already?
Yes, we do have one.
Is it being disseminated already? Or?
Yes, the counselors do have one. Yes. Okay. Yes. And it's about 100 and something pages long. Mm-hmm. Yes, with all the courses and things of that nature. Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
So at this point, we're registration processes and we're advertising across the district. So tomorrow, you'll notice that we will advertise this on our district website to inform parents, hey, we're in the process of course selections and things of that nature, so parents are informed. That's through Dr. Dalavis's direction, by the way. Vertical alignment, again, elementary to middle and middle to high. So our fifth graders know what courses are going to be offered. So counselors have to go in there and coordinate, hey, here's what we're offering, get them signed up. And then our eighth graders going on to high school. So that's the process going on. Next, after that, we're going to complete our registration, and we're going to do it online. So basically, kids will be able to have the opportunity to go in there and put their course request online. Then from there, we'll be able to get tally course offerings and determine which courses will be needed. So in other words, if not enough kids sign up for a certain course, fall or less, and then that class will not end. So that's how that whole process works. And then from there, we finalize our course offerings based on student needs. Essentially, based on what students choose, we know more or less what classes will be offered. That's the next step.
I have a concern over that 12 students or less registered, the class will be deleted. What if Like, for example, there's 12 students on, I can't think of a specific subject, but there's students that want, that are interested in a specific area. They want to major in something like that in college. And you, they can't compile that with another teacher?
Well, and the reason why you do that is, so say for example, out of, say Canopillo High School, you got 1,800 kids. And let's say only 12 kids in the entire school system, in that school in particular, you got 1,800 kids, choose a particular one class that's a singleton, which we say that's the only class. We literally took this out of policy. There's a policy written on there, and it's 12 to 1 ratio. Now, of course, if we can somehow make it work, if it's efficient, then we can probably address that. Like maybe a dual credit class. But typically, you want to keep to a ratio. Otherwise, you're going to have small classes, and it's not efficient as far as your FTE.
I'm not thinking it should be a small class, no. If you could put two, I mean, I'm not saying, I'm not the expert here, but let's say a teacher has six in one subject area, in another, in 112. I mean, it's already 18 students, two different subject areas, similar. Let's say science. I mean.
Yeah, like you're talking about two different courses?
Yeah, two different courses.
Of course, at that moment, that's when those decisions will be made, yes.
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
Yes, I see what you're saying. We say 12 kids are signed up here, six signed up for this class is very similar. And at that point, counselors and the administration can make that determination. You know what, we could combine and make it into 18. Absolutely, I see what you're saying. But that's that process there. That's when we start looking at courses and what's being, what kids want to take. After that, then you start doing the complex matrix process. And in here is where, as you get your course selections, you start aligning to see if you have any singletons or doubletons. And basically, a singleton would be like a class that's only offered in that particular area, like your 18th, for example, that's a singleton. And that you have to make sure that those singletons are spread out evenly so kids have more opportunities to take those classes. If you have the singleton signed up on the same period, then you're going to have to take a choice of one or the other. Mm-hmm. So that's all that whole process of the conflict matrix. You want to make sure that you have as much flexibility so kids can take different courses throughout that process. Again, at this point, the principal started looking at staffing issues, special requests, and the list of courses affected by constraints, making sure that they're spread out evenly, and prepare the schedule board of sectionships. It's basically, and it depends how different schools do it, but you get a big board and you start putting your classes and you start making sure your singletons, which are always coded in a different color, so they stand out, are spread evenly amongst your 7 to 8 periods. After that is our needs assessment, and we'll be working in coordination with HR and our finance department, because at that point, the principal pretty much knows, along with the counselors, more or less what our needs are gonna be. And so that's at that point when you start having a needs assessment, start having staffing, hey, I need extra FTEs based on this, whatnot, and changes are made at that time. So here, basically, what we're doing is we're showing student numbers with respect to appropriate staffing for general education, bilingual, special ed. So all those things are taken into account to make sure that we're in compliance with all the programs. So that's that needs assessment process. And then from there, now the principals know what their FTEs are, they have everything there, and they construct the master schedule. At that point, you literally start putting it in, start working it, and then you batch. At that point, once you batch and you load, you start revising it. Because typically, a good batch is about 70 to 80% on the first try. So at that point, once you have a good batch, you start editing, hand scheduling to make sure that you have 100% completion. You typically hand schedule the counselors going individually and start figuring out constraints within kids. And our goal is to have 90% by the end of the school year. And then we'll continue on with hand scheduling for June to have 100%, so that way we can have 100% schedules made and printed, so we have a schedule pickup. So that's the gist of master schedule. Any questions?
Any questions?
No.
No? Okay. Pretty good. Thank you for your information. Next agenda item, please.
Item F, the Art and Science of Teaching presentation.
Okay. In previous committee meetings, I had mentioned that we're working on instructional framework model, and so I'm going to give you a big overview of what that is, kind of start giving you information on where we're heading for next year. And this is Art and Science of Teaching through Marzano, and Marzano is one of the leading four figures in research around teaching and learning. And so basically, it just comes down to this. What is it about a great teacher? What is it that that teacher that everybody every year wants, that every administrator, when they visit classrooms, that's a teacher we want to go to. And also, that teacher is the one that always gets results. You know, wouldn't it be great if we can just somehow clone what that great teacher does across the whole district, across every single classroom. And so that's where Mazzano comes in. He literally looks at what is it about that teacher that makes him great, and try to identify critical areas to help improve teacher practice. So we know this, 40 years of research, you can look it up and down, doesn't matter which way. The teacher makes the most difference. Teacher first, then the principal. No ifs and buts about it. The teacher is the single most effect size as far as student achievement. Why? Because they're the ones that directly work with kids. So if I were to tell you this, and this is a quote of what matters very much in which classrooms. Just think about this for a second. If a student is in one of the most effective classrooms, suppose your kid happens to be with that great teacher that we all know. He or she will learn in 6 months what they would learn in an average classroom in 1 year. That's how much an effective teacher makes a difference.
That's true.
Think about that for a second.
It's true.
On the flip side, though, however, if your kid or your child happens to be placed in a classroom with one of the least effective teachers, they will learn the same amount, and basically the same amount of time that an effective teacher teaches in 6 months, it'll take them 2 years. And then we wonder why we have gaps.
Or more.
Because if your child happens to be the one that's placed with an ineffective teacher, 2 years to make up what an effective teacher does in six. So that right there is why we have to do this. But essentially, we want to make sure that all our teachers are effective. And the only way you can make that happen is by having a common instructional framework. So the art and science by the numbers. What Marzano has done, he's broken down the science of teaching. What is it about that teacher? You have 41 instructional elements because it differentiates the growth of needs of teachers. It also has 9 lesson design questions to guide our practice. And I'll show you a model that will kind of include and tell you what that is. And then if you look at an instructional day or an instructional period, Marzano has broken it down to 3 segments. So you can really pinpoint specific areas of that teaching cycle. So again, 41 instructional elements, 9 lesson design questions to engage thinking around practice, and 3 segments for every lesson. Three segments of a lesson. First segment involves routine behaviors. Second one is how do you address content in specific ways? And lastly, segments that are enacted on the spot. So this is the way Marzano has broken down that whole framework so we can have dialogue around teaching practices. To be more specific, let's talk about the routine. You gotta be able to set clear learning goals. This work, in doing and aligning the curriculum, takes years to master. But that is something that is very clear. In other words, are we hitting the targets of what our teachers teaching so kids are learning to that target? Sounds very simple, but it's not. Are we establishing how we provide feedback and track student progress? Establishing classroom routines and procedures, such as attention signal moving routines. And lastly, organizing the physical layout of the class. So basically, within this one segment, you have various entities that you can address teaching. And how we address content, there's ways to address new content. In other words, when you're first introducing content for the first time, and you have various strategies. And honestly, when you think about it, not all strategies are meant for everything. Some do and can transcend in various ways, but some are very specific. So when you're introducing content for the first time, you gotta be very specific and to the point so kids can really grasp the content. And so those strategies include like questions, cues, advanced organizers, summarizing and note-taking, non-linguistic representation, which are graphic organizers, chunking information, cooperative learning, pacing of the lesson, establishing guiding questions. Now all these takes training and long time to master, but at least we're able to identify and target it. Yes, ma'am?
What's chunking information?
Chunking information is instead of just throwing all information at the student, because you know, you've got so much information I want my kids to master or learn for the first time, you break it down into chunks.
Okay, thank you.
You're addressing it in pieces.
Okay.
Because too much information is not. Yes, ma'am? But those strategies around them and how to do that. Another way is, there's a way to introduce new content, and the second one is how do you practice and deepen. So once you've introduced the information, what else do you do to deepen their understanding of the content? There's such strategies like cooperative learning, similarities and differences, homework and practice, and questioning and new practice. So all these are strategies. Lastly, in working with content, is you want them to generate a test hypothesis. So you've introduced it, now you've practiced it, and the next step would be generating testing the hypothesis. Such activities would be organizing students into complex tasks involving hypothesis generation and testing, and provide resources for guidance. There's just a bunch of strategies around those areas. So you wouldn't necessarily use these strategies to introduce content. This is towards the end. Number three, behaviors and acting on the spot. And this is managing response rates. How often you call on kids? Is it you always talking and the kids are sitting and they're just bored? And so those are some of those strategies. Reinforcing effort and providing recognition. Building and maintaining positive relationships. We do know this. If the student doesn't like you, they're not going to learn from you. And that's like the big elephant in the room that everyone wants to talk about. You have to form these relationships. And there's actually strategies around that as well. Demonstrating high expectations for all students. Maintaining a lively pace for instruction so they're not bored. You have to keep pace with them. There's various activities around that, and use of academic games in the classroom. So it's not just always lecturing to kids and talking down to them. You gotta vary it. So I'm gonna show you now a graphic organizer, a non-linguistic representation. So I just gave you the list. If I were to do this, and you'll be seeing this a lot in the future. So there's the green one, where it's the first routine of involves routines. Now we're talking about addressing content, and there's three different ways. Interacting with new knowledge. Now you practice. And then now you generate a test hypothesis. So you just can't do them all at once. So you have to have different lessons for that. And lastly, the segments around that keep the whole classroom together. That's where you come your high expectations, your classroom procedures, how you call on kids, your relationship with kids. And the best way, and we've been having this discussion on instructional coaches and our assistant principals to kind of get them to think around this, because I'm showing this graphic organizer, but if you just think about it and you study it, it begins to make more sense. For example, if you want to think about it in terms of events, if any one of those four things is not happening, the whole thing's going to fall apart. You can be great at everything, but if you don't have the teacher-student relationship piece down, guess what? They're not going to learn as much as you want them to. However, they can like you, but if you don't have high expectations, guess what? They're not going to learn as much. So you have to have all these pieces work together. Now, here are the last section. I know, and pretty much what I've given you guys is the overall framework. For us to really go through it in the district, it's going to take 3 or 4 years, maybe 5, to practice and to learn all these various processes. However, the way Marzano set it up is he has 9 design lessons, 9 design questions, where basically we could, for a year or two, focus on certain questions on just that. And we'll learn around that. Then the following year, we do another design question. So basically, is you do 1 or 2 design questions a year around that work, because there's so many different strategies that come under that design question. So under involving routines, there's 2 questions. What will I do to establish or communicate learning goals, track student progress, and celebrate successes? That is a loaded question, and that is not something you're going to do in 1 training, 2 trainings, 3 trainings. It's going to be multiple trainings throughout a whole year with feedback for teachers. Next question, I'll go down to the lesson segments involving content. What will I do to help students effectively interact with new knowledge? And so all you do is engage in discussion and professional development in different ways to engage kids with new knowledge. And there's a plethora of different ways to address that. And so you break all this down, and this gives us 3 segments, and it gives us areas of study per year. Right now we're working with principals, we've trained them around this framework. We're still gonna go back and reteach. It's a lot, very, very detailed and a lot of different segments. But the next step is now working with them in concurrence with them, and what is going to be our first design question? Which question do we want to focus on for year 1 next year when we roll this out? But I just kind of want to give you a big picture. And please understand these questions are not very, you cannot study it and learn it in one time. It's going to take a process to grow our teachers. Any questions?
I have one. Do you feel implementing this with your instructional coordinators, that you'll be able to identify those teachers that aren't the great teacher that we all want our kids in their classroom? Will you be able to recognize them and come to their assistance and find out if they are able to be assisted to become a great teacher? Or do we need to start going the other way?
Well, yes, it's a two-way sword. because we always want to take the lens of, I'm here to help and support and grow our teachers, but at some point, the principal has to make a decision. It's not the instructional coaches, the principal. We started this work. When I first arrived, the thought was, we train teachers, and I say we, that is the central office, and the principal is involved in this process. When really, the principal goes hand in hand with us in training teachers, working with them, because I cannot provide feedback and give them assess them and how they're doing. The principal does. I don't have that authority. The principal does. So we've trained our principals first, and our APs and our ICs. So once they have a good understanding of what this is, and they'll be the ones to push the work forward. I mean, of course, we'll be there to provide support and guidance, but at the end of the day, it's the principal that's going to make those kind of decisions based on how teachers are progressing. And it is our hope and our intent that most teachers will progress. But unfortunately, there's going to be some decisions made, but now at least a principal has a lens into you. Because, you know, when you walk through the classroom and you wonder, what exactly is it that makes that teacher ineffective? Well, now we have specific design questions that can lead us right into pinpoint and say, that teacher's not very good at helping students interact with new knowledge. And we've been given a professional development and we don't see it. So now I can really be purposeful in my PEDAS or things of that nature. Right, we hope that that's the last step in the process. We always want to give people the opportunity to show growth first through professional development and feedback. I don't know if that, it's going to be a process that really comes down to the campus administration.
You say it'll take a full 3 or 4 years to...
But that doesn't necessarily mean that if you have a really ineffective teacher, you shouldn't give them opportunities to grow, and they don't show growth by, say,
sometimes
December,
you
January,
kept
February,
them for 10, 20 years, 30 years.
Agreed.
Until they retire. Yeah.
And this defines what a good teacher is.
Yes.
Specific, it's...
So now when I'm walking in, I know exactly what I'm looking for. I'm not just looking at, you know, because the best way I can describe it is when I tell principals, I can walk into a classroom or into this, and I can describe anything, but if I don't give you a specific purpose, I'm not going to know what to look for. If I were to tell you, Ms. Mendoza, when you walk into this boardroom, I want you to take a look at our Cano DISD logo. And when you come in, you're going to look at that, and you're going to give me a specific information. If I didn't give you that, you'd just be walking in. You might be looking at the wall. You might be looking at the lights. You might be looking at the carpet. Here, I'm looking here. And we're working on this, and I expect you to improve here. See, so it makes it easier for us to document and to help teachers grow. Instead of just being all over the place. Yes,
I have a question to the chair. I love the thought that you can, you know, foster, you know, the ones that need fostering, and really applaud and sort of give gratitude to the ones that really need it, that deserve it more than anything. I'm a little concerned on what this may entail on the reporting side. And pursuant to that, there is a policy specific to reporting that, and I don't know if we've received it in the past. I think it's DLB local that we get a report on teacher paperwork because, or teacher reporting, I think it is, that if there's more work involved here, that we need to sort of lessen the load somewhere because teachers are already put to a certain breaking point. You know, my wife's a teacher, and I'll be the first one to say, you know, her bridge is almost broke, so to speak.
Yeah, this isn't to add more paperwork. We're not adding more paperwork to the teacher. What we're trying to do is define quality teaching according to the research.
Okay.
So when we say...
So this doesn't entail any reporting, any additional paperwork?
This is to define what is a quality teacher.
I don't want to cross the barriers between what PEDAS is.
Okay. And that's really the other level of that.
This idea to me, my role is to provide a structure to help teachers get better at what they do.
Yes.
And that's supporting principals, AP, and instructional coaches around the common practice, right?
So teachers won't really see the effect of this other than better coaching,
Yeah, so teachers and principals, when you say that was good teaching, what about it was good?
Yes,
was
exactly.
Was it my questioning? Was it my student response rate?
Engagement level.
So it's very specific on the feedback to the teacher. Well,
what I would like to see, though, is...
I will tell you this, and I caution you all a few times. This is why we've been working on our core beliefs as a district. We believe about student-centered, high expectations, accountability, all those things. And we're going to walk the walk. Some teachers, and this is a warning right now, may see this as, well, you're just telling me what I'm supposed to teach. But that's not the case. What we're doing here is we're giving you an avenue to really pinpoint and in a specific area to improve. But I can totally see how, because I've had experience in when they bring in a principal, when they run an instructional framework model, some teachers may take this as, well, now they're dictating how we're supposed to teach. But that's not the case. We're practicing and we're learning around specific teacher moves that's going to make teachers great. Remember, let's go back to the original comment. What makes that teacher great?
Correct.
What makes teacher A from teacher B? And so what we're doing is we're trying to look what teacher B does, A does, and replicate those specific behaviors. So it's not, that's why it's called the art and the science. It's not so simple, but Marzano's done an excellent job of breaking those components down.
Okay.
Am I?
Yeah, and I was more concerned as to the implementation. Would this affect our teachers that already have an increased workload because of changes in the district? Will they get more workload? And specific to that, that we would get a report on what current reports they have now. And I think it is something that we can get as part of our policy that we request from our superintendent. You know, I'm sure he's going to just hand it off to you and say, hey, get this report to us. On teacher paperwork. And what steps have been made, or I think it actually reads, annually upon the board's request, the superintendent shall report to the board on efforts to minimize teacher paperwork and on the number and length of written reports that teachers are required to prepare.
So in this particular, I can address that on this
presentation.
This one does not require reports. What it does require is teachers to learn, do professional development, and apply it to the classroom.
Okay.
If that's called a report, I don't know.
No. I'd still like to get that report on what paperwork is already required in the class so we can stick to our policy and make sure that we're adhering to it.
Mr. Medina, I think that varies from campus to campus based on what principals expect out of teachers.
But should it?
I don't know. I mean, that's a loaded question because it could the principal is, and so that's a whole other topic of discussion.
But in your view, in your professional opinion, should it vary from campus to campus, considering that we're a district that we're trying to, you know, align everything?
Every campus is unique and has had a set of specific, not every campus, there is no ABC style to run a school, because every school has different sets of adults, various experiences and expertise. We have different kinds of kids. So to say that all schools are the same is ludicrous. That being said, we know in research, which is not stated here, that there are certain principal moves that that an effective principal should do.
Ah, okay.
And we do know that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So I don't know if I answered your question, but there are certain things that an effective principal does, and should do.
That you look for as well.
And that research says, yes, that you look for principals, certain things that there's certain characteristics of an effective principal. But to say that every principal does the same thing, I can tell you I've had two campuses and I had to do different leadership styles for both.
Okay.
However, I still maintain certain leadership things that I had to take care of.
Great.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, no, it does. It does. Dr. G, if you can, I think it's under DLB. Can you prepare that at some point? Because I know we're supposed to be getting it. And I know I haven't seen it in the last year because we've had such a tumultuous year. But it's a minimizing of teacher paperwork. There's a legal side, and then there's a local side. The legal side just tells you exactly what they're looking for, you know, from what they can report on, from student welfare and health to, you know, grading. But I don't think I've ever seen this report. More than anything, I love the direction. I love the fact that we're thinking dual language, and, you know, we're contemplating all this. But what does that mean to the teacher ultimately? Is it going to increase the load, and are we trying to minimize somewhere else their paperwork, because they're ultimately there to teach. So yeah, if you can, yeah, if you can take care of that. Appreciate that.
I heard from you, principal, and I hear from you, teacher, and this is awesome. This is great. This is a motivational and an organizational issue, I believe. Am I correct? To try and get everybody on the right path. These are teachers. Are you doing the same thing? Does the principal know to look for all of these in their teacher and know to try and extract that from their teachers instead of just crushing? You know, shoot, you can't do any of this. You just barely can even organize your classroom. You're a loser.
That's true, because we have several crushers too.
Yeah, this isn't a crushing, that this is an exhortation. That.
Yes.
Trying to raise the level for all instead of, you know, I hate you, so I'll just crush you. You're not going to
And so,
well, you know what I mean? You've got to have the principal that says, I want to exhort my campus to rise to these levels and accomplish these. And I personally think 4 years is way too long. But if that's what your research shows.
But to get through the whole thing, it'll take about 4 years. That doesn't mean you're not going to see.
I bet you'll see it way quicker than that, personally.
Yes. Go over our training with principals and.
Yeah, well, and that was the thing. So first what we did was we first trained our principals, our assistant principals, and our instructional coaches first. Because mm-hmm. they're wanting to help lead the work.
Have they been trained already, or that's
yes, yes, we've already had up to now.
Okay.
Yes, but to say that they've been, we're still going to continue that training because it's a lot. So mm-hmm. yes, we've already been giving them training since.
And do you step back in and go, oh, looks like you learned it, or not so good? Guess
you
you're going to need
refresher.
A refresher there because yeah, you're right back in the rut.
It is a lot. You're going to have to go back and revisit the second semester. You're right, Mr.
Yeah.
And the next step is going to be is now they're going to work with their teacher leaders. The campus will train them in the summer, and they're going to work together with the teacher leaders to help train the teachers.
In an exciting fashion, in an uplifting instead of the crusher.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, no, I got you. Thank you, Dr. Galavis.
Exactly what we're looking for.
Because you know what, Mr. Earls, and building capacity.
Awesome.
But you're right. It's all about how you roll it out and how you present it to teachers.
It is.
It's all in the message and how you present it. I completely agree.
It is.
And there has been a discussion that's been ongoing with principals, and we're making them very cognizant because this right here is a shift in thinking. Because too often teachers kind of do their thing mm-hmm. on their own. Now we're like, no, we're going to focus on specific criteria.
But even if you do your thing, I mean, I can see where this can work in anyone's life. I could take all of this home and add it to my life and, you know, say, gee, that'd probably be a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And yet still be able to be an individual instead of a drone.
Which goes back to the key words, is there's an art and there's a science to teaching. So we want to leave the art to the teacher, but the science part of it is it gives us a direction of where we want to focus.
But I think the principal is so
they're the second most effective.
Very instrumental.
First is the teacher, then is the principal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm glad that you recognize that.
What you have at that campus makes a difference. Yes.
Yeah, it has to be an uplifter and a carrier, not a crusher.
Carrier?
You know, you got to carry the good wave along, keep riding that wave.
All right, thank you very much for your information.
Thank you very much.
Next agenda item.
Item G, job description.
Job description, Ms. Barrasco.
We hope. No. We're going to be here till 9. I'm going to ask questions.
Good evening, Madam Chair, committee members, and Dr. Gavis. The item that I have before you, the migrant assistant, it is not a new, I mean, it is a new FTE, but it is not a new position. We do have that position currently. However, there was a request submitted through the federal funding that funds this grant, and there was an additional request for an additional migrant assistant to assist at the middle school level, and the funding agency approved. So I'm bringing this before you. For the recommendation that we add that FTE, the funding does exist and it was approved. So I would like to have the recommendation to approve so that we can move forward with this position.
Question?
Any questions? No. We'll recommend it to the whole board.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next agenda item.
Item H, professional service agreement, Teach for America.
I'm bringing before you a contract that I received prior to winter break, and this is for Teach for America. This is a program that Dr. Galavis has brought to Canutillo, and I'm sure that he can explain that a little bit more. He's more familiar with the program because I believe they used to use it in Round Rock. We have met with the representative for Teach for America. It seems like a very interesting program where they recruit teachers from from the various colleges and universities throughout the country. Dr. Lewis, is there anything you want to add?
No, and it wasn't from Round Rock. It was from, I met Miss Christine. She right now works in, I know Teach From America from Washington, D.C., and was familiar with that. And then given that there is a fee of $3,000
per teacher,
which handles the professional development. And this is just an opportunity. They're coming into the El Paso region. Right now they're in Las Cruces and several parts of New Mexico. So their goal is to come in, work with our districts in this region and have a commitment of one teacher, as many teachers as you need, just in case there's a shortage. As Ms. Jimenez was showing, is that we're, teachers are declining as far as UTEP, and so we just want an opportunity if we do have a need for a teacher in a high critical area, for example, Algebra 1 or Biology, that we could go forth and attain these teachers. Again, but it will be at a cost of $3,000 per teacher.
That's for headhunting?
Pardon?
Is that like a headhunting fee?
Plus
their salary.
Plus their salary.
What makes them, questioning. Just
many of these teachers that they do recruit from, for example, USC, UCLA, and they recruit from all over the country.
Do we need to work it in there? No UCLA graduates, please?
this similar program to the UTEP agreement, the MOU that we agreed to earlier?
Well, the program is similar to an alternative certification program where, you know, you can go ahead and recruit the teacher, run them through the program, and they're also working on their certification.
But UTEP doesn't charge us.
No, there is no charge.
Is there a difference in the type of teacher we get from UTEP versus Teacher for America? Are they highly qualified? Are they passing certain regiments?
It's like an alternative certification program.
Okay.
I don't feel comfortable. I don't know.
They come from top-tier universities.
But they don't have teaching certificates?
Pardon me?
Do they have teaching certificates? They don't have teaching.
No, most of the times when districts, it's more for the high school.
Okay.
For that Algebra 1, that Biology.
It's mainly secondary. It's not really elementary.
It's mainly secondary that they recruit for.
But they're not credentialed?
No, they provide their own professional development.
Oh, okay.
They provide like their own and their teacher's coach. It's just an opportunity to keep open as if we do have a need. Again, given the UTEP and the decline in student teachers, and what I've known, and then you can correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Carrasco, I don't know how many of our student teachers that we attain go straight to the high school versus elementary.
I did contact other districts within
the
El Paso area.
Because
I know that they haven't signed on to the program. I heard Dr. Galavi saying that this was something that was going to be presented to other superintendents. And I know that in talking to other HR offices, they had said that they had told me that this program was a very good program. That, you know, some of them are familiar from previous jobs. They said, you know, it's used in East Texas because of the lack of bilingual teachers. So it's an excellent program for them to recruit those type of teachers that they need. And so, I mean, here in El Paso,
we don't have that need.
But there is this contract where we can go ahead and have, we would be the first district to work with Teach for America.
Guinea pigs. Mr. Rodriguez.
Just real quick, on some of the conferences they've had people from Teach for America, and a lot of good things. As a matter of fact, one of our previous board members, for some that attended UT, got on Teach for America and went to Houston, which was Ms. Sanchez. And so it's a great opportunity where they get top tier, students that went to certain universities and then they try to mold them into a teaching profession. So I think it's a great opportunity for our district to get a different type, as well as having the pool we currently have, but at least going out and looking at some of these students and seeing what they could provide to the district. I think as a matter, one of them, well, I don't know if you all recall the teacher we had from Harvard. I don't know if that was part of the program, but that's the top of, the type of candidate sometimes you get with the, in this program, so.
I don't know, I feel comfortable with the pay. I mean, we're running short on funds and here we are giving money. I don't know, how about you, Mr. Medina?
And it's not a commitment that we're gonna pay?
We are, that's an MOU.
No, but I was just saying, what we want to use this is that, and just in case we do have trouble recruiting a certain teacher for a high school, for example, Algebra 1.
But we don't know that.
No, we don't know that yet, but we want to be able to offer it rather than...
I don't feel comfortable right now. I don't know about you, Mr.
I guess the concern is the certification, teacher certification, in where other credentialed teachers... they're going to be in the same environment. I don't know. Is there more information on Teacher for America that you can provide, maybe to the full board? Because all I see is it's a headhunting fee. It's like $3,000 headhunting fee. And not to say we don't have, I haven't seen yet that we're running short on teachers. In fact, we have one of the biggest hiring sprees. We did a report on it, I believe, here at the district. So I just want to make sure that we're spending that money wisely. Although, if it shows these great results and these teachers are of that high caliber, I don't know why they wouldn't get teaching credentials. I guess that's where I'm kind of at odds.
Like I said, it's the same as an alternative certification. Okay. We hire people through alternative certification programs, so they're working on their certification
So this isn't unprecedented for alternatives.
It's not a temporary
permit
that we get for them. And so they're working on that as they're teaching. So it's the same as your Region 19 and your Texas ACT program.
Okay.
And so it kind of runs, except that what they're recruiting here, they're coming from different parts of the country and different universities.
They're bringing them here to El Paso.
Yes.
To Kintia, yes.
I just would like to add that I have worked very closely with the Teach for America teachers.
Mm-hmm.
I supervise them in Houston, a lot of them. Houston have been working with Teach for America for a long time. And I also supervise them in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And they are a wonderful group. But they do come from a different background. That the teachers, somebody asked before, what is the difference between them and the ones that come from UTEP?
Yes.
And well, the difference is these are teachers that come from different professions. And they go through a special program that is designed to prepare them to become teachers. So when they come, for example, if you have engineers, a lot of these teachers, many of them are engineers, many of them are coming from accounting or other backgrounds. They come to the high schools and serve in that area. They are wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Once they have a very good internal support
mm-hmm.
at the campus level and district level, and they are very effective teachers, but that is the difference. Their background is in other areas other than teaching.
It's not education-based.
But the program has a very strong foundation on how to prepare them to join the field of education. Okay. I just wanted to add that.
I think I'd feel more comfortable if we just took it up to the full board.
Okay. We can put in for, bring it to the full board for approval.
And if you could provide more info, like on Teach for America. I know that you mentioned it before, and I meant to ask you on what exactly it was, because we talked about it with Porterplex. Yeah. We talked with them about that.
Just if I might add to, I think, I don't know if it was TED Talks, but it was one of the programs that I was watching. I think it dealt with those, it's how you develop the student, especially if they come from, because I believe there's some that come from a profession and then there's some that come from Ivy League universities or top tier institutions like UT, and it's how do you teach them, because I remember having some of my teachers that came as engineers and they knew their stuff, but their ability to teach in a classroom setting was a more difficult task, and we didn't learn, to be honest, with some of the teachers that we had. So it's the the program that's in place. And so I think if we could get some more information and then, because it's well recognized as part of
it. It sounds like it does. I mean, I just want to know what those 3,000 sounds like. They vet them pretty properly. I just want to get more info.
And it is a 2-year commitment.
2 years. Is there a minimum that we have to hire certain amounts, or it's just that we have that ability to hire from their talent pool?
Ability.
Okay.
My understanding of meeting with the representative is that, you know, in order for them to be able to provide us the teachers that we need, of course, we're going to have to tell them in advance, or, you know, she was wanting the contract so that she could go ahead and start looking for those teachers. Good. So whatever comes on board or whoever comes on board, it will be a 2-year commitment.
Madam Chair, I have a
question. Yes, sir.
The other side to the coin on this, or another side to a coin might be better put, my understanding of Teach for America was that if you were a teacher and you wanted to progress in your education, you had, say, your bachelor's degree, and you wanted to progress and get your master's degree, or even go on to a second master's, that Teach for America was like an opening and a doorway to do that. And that through the program, you would go to work for a district, and they would in turn pay for you to have this additional education added. Is that, am I totally off?
She didn't mention any of that. I don't know if Dr. Gonzalez is familiar.
That isn't? Okay, thank you.
We'll give more information.
Yeah, if we could. I wouldn't have any issue with it. I just think we need to put it up to the full board for that, because it is a little different mindset. And I'd like to get more program info.
Yes, we'll get in this week's packet.
Okay. Carlo, that's
such a nice piece. Item 9, TASB localized policy number 898.
What?
I have update 98, which we've talked about in the past, and I know there were some questions to bring it back. And at this point, whatever questions you have regarding the policies that are listed, please let me know.
I had only one question. I sort of got it all together. The one question I guess I have was, our school health advisory committee, in this, under the legal portion, there are two really big things that they have to do now.
One is policy.
It is policy B like boy, D like dog, F like Frank legal, to form a physical activity and a fitness planning subcommittee, and to have some mental health curriculum added to their duties. It's some additions. And we have such a nice SHAC committee now, from what my understanding
yes.
is. I wanted to make sure that they would, you know, be aware.
Yes, and I believe Mr. Scobedo does have that committee in place
good.
Already. Where they're making recommendations to the campuses and to the curriculum for physical education. But I will be sure to share this policy with him if you like, and then we can go ahead and formalize a response in the Thursday packet.
Sure.
So he can explain
that would be that. Wonderful. Thank you. And with that, we can adopt it.
Yay.
So we can move it forward for
yes.
second reading?
Second reading.
Okay.
Done.
Sorry to be the fly in the ointment.
You're holding this up. It's not even 8. I probably held it up longer. Sorry.
Are we done?
Yeah, I believe so.
All right. Okay. Miss Dory, is that the only question you had?
I think.
Are you sure?
DFP?
Well, you know, now if you wanted me to make.
No.
No.
No, but I thought you had to make sure. Forward to recommend for the board.
She's already ahead of that. She's like, yeah.
Is that it? Are you sure?
Oh, you know, there was something good in here, too. Dr. Galavis, if you could, we've had a parent come forth and admonish us real directly about Common Core. Maybe you could send him a copy of EHAC Legal, which prohibits us from using Common Core state standards. And maybe that might make him feel comfortable. Okay, that was it.
So,
Yeah, it was Mr. Joyner.
Mr. Joyner, where is he?
Are we done? Okay, next agenda item.
Item 3, community input.
Speaking of Mr. Joyner.
Community input.
Ta-da.
Okay, next agenda item.
Item 4, adjournment.
Adjournment, and it is 5:35.
Shortest meeting ever.
I think you're going to get like the gold medal.